Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is high-performance teams, optimally combining AI and biological intelligence. My guest is Dr. Etienne van der Walt, thought leader, consultant neurologist, CEO and founder of NeuroZone, and founder of Amazing Brains. Welcome back on the show, Etienne.
Thanks, Mariëtte. It's great to be with you.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us. After our conversation, it will be fun question time. Etienne, for those listeners who haven't heard our podcast on cognitive empathy, could you please explain what it is you do?
Yes, Mariëtte. Being a neurologist and coming from the clinical world and having treated patients over many years with neurological illnesses, I moved into the space of what we call the functional and the people who are well without illness, working above that line of functionality, but supporting people really to remain well, to keep their brains well, their brain-body systems well, and in that process, learned about a field called psychoneuroimmunology, which is about how the brain-body system stays well in the face of challenges throughout our lives. And of course, that brings in a lot of different angles, different stages of life, different experiences. And we study the way the brain-body system really ensures that it thrives towards longevity, so to speak, as an endpoint, as a goal and a primary outcome. So I work in this field with a team of neuroscientists and of many different kind of neuro people to understand how the brain-body system does this for us and to understand how we actually can build this capacity, which we call high-performance resilience, to stay well throughout our lives in different stages of life.
Etienne, many people have grave misgivings about living in the age of AI. In an article you wrote, you said they fear it may undermine their jobs, purpose, and humanity. You also wrote, and I quote, "In the history of human innovation, each new tool has been met with both excitement and trepidation." Could you explain?
Well, I think, without knowing exactly what the future holds, I think it's useful to just think back a bit towards the history in the past. When I was a child, I remember that was the advent of the calculator. And I use this as an example very often and say, I remember the skepticism and also even the fear with which, for example, the calculator was introduced and welcomed into the world that we know it today. And there was a fear that this would reduce the capacity of, for example, the human calculation capacity and the way we work as human beings and so forth. And studies refuted this over time. And so we know now that the advent of the calculator did not only actually make our lives easier, but also enabled us to have more what we call real estate available in the brain for many different new ways of being even more innovative and better at complex problem solving and so forth. Now, it's a big jump from the calculator to AI, but down the road there were many different inventions. Along the lines, for example, of the personal computer, the advent of the internet, the way we communicate online through the cyberspace, different forms of communication, and the large language models that we talk about when we talk about AI. Of course, AI does more than just large language models, but this is probably the best known to us. For example, ChatGPT, Gemini, Meta, and so forth. The advent of AI in that sense became a household conversation and a household term. But long before 2024, the beginning of 2024, when we became very aware of ChatGPT, for example, AI has been around. In fact, it's more than 30 years old, and there's been many studies and work done on how AI can improve our lives. The challenge, of course, at the time was that there was just not enough bandwidth in the cyberspace, so to speak, to actually make AI available at the kind of the level that we have it today and as widely as it is today to the public. And so AI has been around for a very long time. And we did realize, I remember in 2016 even, I spent time with the McKinsey Consortium of Learning Innovation in Boston on a yearly basis, where we had long conversations. Very fortunate I was to spend time with some of the world leaders in this space who talked about this idea of AI coming and the world of work, for example, that's going to challenge reskilling. It's going to challenge upskilling, and it's challenging work and even challenge the way we reskill and upskill. And so we were very aware of this even at that time already, which is almost 10 years ago. And the whole new way of work has been discussed, and there were waves of knowledge, I think, of understanding and of awareness that was built over time to understand how can we improve and be ready to ensure that we are ready for this whole new wave of technology which AI would bring. And I thought that was actually very valuable. And so, yes, is it a threat? Well, every new invention is a threat if it takes away some of the manual work that some people do. And if we don't continue to move with the times as a human race, we will have those challenges. The good news is that human intelligence is so adaptable, and we are so adaptable to this process, and we continue through our waves of consciousness over even decades beforehand, start to actually replan, regroup, refocus, make new plans to actually adapt to the new technology. So I think the good news is that the human consciousness has already been working with these challenges long before it actually became known to individuals out there.
Thank you, Etienne. That's helpful. Now, you help individuals understand the similarities and differences between AI and BI, or biological intelligence. And you do this in order to help us understand how to combine AI and BI for optimal outcomes in the workplace. To whet our appetites for this conversation, could you please offer us a brief vision of, firstly, how AI could ideally be used in the workplace, and secondly, where humans would direct their focus?
Okay, and this is a question, Mariette, that if we listen to this podcast probably in a year's time, you're going to say, well, Etienne, you've completely missed the point, because AI can now do this and this and this, right? Because there's such an incredible growth of the way AI works. So we have to say, year on the 22nd of April 2025, this is probably the best way we can think about AI, right? And the good news is also how we think about human intelligence, or BI, biological intelligence. This is also growing and developing. The way we are interconnecting is rapidly advancing as well. So let me just share a thought, and then, of course, put myself out there for criticism in the future. Mm-hmm. First of all, currently, AI is a wonderful pattern recognizer. It has phenomenal processing speed, and it can actually do tireless repetition for us. So the great news is that a lot of the mundane tasks that we have been doing as individuals over many years can now be done by AI so much quicker. The great news is that you therefore can use it as a tool to enhance the speed at which you work. For example, and I think everybody who uses these large language models know that this is the case. You can develop proposals and write up documents and memos and thoughts and letters, and you can do all kinds of things that required a lot of cognitive space, so to speak, in the past so much quicker. You can do calculations. You can even use AI, if you understand how to do this, in programming, in machine learning, data analysis, all kinds of processes where pattern recognition is important, where you can make predictions with data, etc. So it can actually be used in a very simple way, but also then in a much more complex way. the great thing about AI, which we actually, and I say great because you'll probably say, well, is it really great, is that AI also has developed, very quickly developed a way of understanding through its millions of linear processing pieces and bits. It figured out a way to even be empathetic, to even actually to collaborate with an individual in a way that an individual feels that this is almost a person that's actually collaborating with you as an assistant, as a guide, as an advisor, et cetera, et cetera. Now, all of these things are possible. And of course, some of them have got some challenges and threats, and I'd love to actually share some of those with you. So if you think about AI and BI, the difference, there are less differences currently than what we thought a year ago. And I think that's the sort of scary part, right? So the scary bit is that we thought that one of the major differences between biological intelligence and artificial intelligence is going to be this capacity for empathy. Let me just quickly explain for those of us, just to get ourselves in the right frame of mind. If you tell me a sad story, that something that happened to you, and you tell it to me, and I feel in your shoes, I feel your pain, and I am compelled to help you, that's called compassion. If you tell me a very sad story, and I feel your pain, but I can hold it, and I am with you in the moment, but I'm not compelled to help you in that sense. I'm actually just feeling the pain with you. That's called affective empathy. Affect referring to this emotional component. And if you tell me a story, and I can think in your shoes, I can actually put myself in your position, and I can actually understand where you're coming from, your opinion and your thoughts and your... That's called cognitive empathy, where I can actually allow you to change the way I think. So the difference between cognitive, affective empathy and compassion is important for this particular line. And we thought this is very deeply human. And of course, it's very human. But we found that these big, large language models, like, for example, ChatGPT, if you start to tell ChatGPT, hey, you know, a very sad story that happened to me today, it's amazing how ChatGPT can actually show and demonstrate even effective empathy. So they can feel in your shoes and can also provide you with support as far as that goes, even to help you work through a difficult concept. We didn't think that's going to be possible so quickly. It's already possible. And so if you use, for example, artificial intelligence language models where they have a voice capability where it can speak back to you, and ChatGPT has this, you'll be astounded at what kind of guidance and support this voice can give to you. And so you might say this is scary, and you know, coaches are going to be in danger soon because an AI coach bot can probably coach me in this sense as well as a human coach and even be more empathetic, at least more consistently empathetic. And that might be true. So the challenge is that we need to continuously think, what is it that actually makes us distinctively human? And what is biological intelligence? And how does that actually work? What is the difference between that and AI? Well, the first important point to make is that AI is a linear processing system. It does what we call a little calculation, so-called. And of course, those calculations can be very complex or complicated, but they are linear. So you've got millions of linear processes that lead to an outcome that gives you what seemingly is a very complex outcome. But it still makes use of zeros and ones, binary processes. And every single one of those requires energy. And so the energy that is needed, for example, for an AI system to give you a result is massive. There are big farms out there, physical spaces where energy is used, electricity is used to actually power these systems so that they can do what they do for us in the cloud. And there's a challenge in that, and there's also a limitation in that regard. So the complexity systems, the way that AI needs to become more complex in terms of its systems, is a challenge for these large language model designers and developers, and of course They are working on all kinds of ways to find ways to reduce the energy and increase the yield. By contrast, the human brain is an incredible energy conserver. So we have the capabilities of actually having an incredible yield for the energy we assign to tasks. And one of the ways the brain does this is over time, and you've got to think of the brain as part of the body. You can't take out the brain and have a body without the brain. And the same with the brain stem, the spinal cord, all the nerves that actually, you know, traverse the whole body, the skin, the muscles, and everything else that it innervates, and the information that then comes from inside to the brain and back. And many of that, you know, signals don't even go to the brain. They actually go to the spinal cord, and they do their thing at that level, depending on what is needed to be done. This whole system is, over time, developed in such a way that it has got what we call saliency. And saliency refers, of course, to the degree to which you assign energy to a task and the importance that you therefore deem that task has in the moment. And so in the moment, the brain is, the whole brain body system is designed to work with every single cue that comes in and say, this is more important now than anything else, or it's less important. And that saliency system then activates the brain body system at the right level, whether it's at this level of the spinal cord or the brainstem, or eventually very nuanced and complex problems in this beautiful prefrontal cortex, which is just behind your hand if you put your hand in your forehead. And along that road, there's also emotion and emotional systems that are at work, called the limbic system and so forth. But the value of this is that the brain body system utilizes not zeros and ones, but it utilizes neural circuits. And the neural circuits are consisting of these brain cells, the neurons, that are actually structured in circuits where they do just the right amount of things for what is required. And their output is immense, also because it's a complex system. And therefore, it doesn't only make use of one sort of electricity that runs through the neurons only. It makes use of the frequency and the amount of, you know, oscillations and all kinds of things. There are so many different components to the way that the brain gives you an action and actually gives you a pattern. So the brain is an immensely powerful, complex pattern recognizer and an energy conserver. But here is the most beautiful thing. So what we are trying to say, just before I get there, is AI going to be able to actually even imitate this? It's a good question. And the answer is not clear. I would say, yes, I think it is possible. And I think it's possible that AI is going to become such a great energy conserver over time. It's going to have different kind of processes and logical processes that's going to enable this to happen. And in our current model, our logic of thinking of AI and BI, it might be that that's going to be possible. But the question is, what is the last frontier then? Is there something that still differentiates at the end of the line? And my thoughts are that the last frontier, if everything else becomes the same, the last frontier is a very, very powerful one. And that is, we need to start to think a bit differently about biological intelligence. Remember that biological intelligence is not artificial intelligence. Remember that artificial intelligence has been created by biological intelligence. And biological intelligence was not created by biological intelligence. We actually look at biological intelligence and we think we understand it. But we don't, right? We actually have a model. We model it in our thinking, in our logical thinking. It might be very different. And here's the crux. I believe that biological intelligence, that intelligence is a complex phenomenon that arises because of many, many more things at play than just a set of neurons that are firing in circuits. It arises at what we call a very deeply visceral level. The whole brain-body system is at play. It is at play when you have, for example, hormones that are secreted, that are leading to different ways of connection. And here, let me extrapolate that a bit. As we excrete hormones as we connect, as we communicate, we connect in ways through hormones and chemicals that enable not only a deep visceral process in my own brain-body system, but also in others. And in that process, we deeply connect with each other, which leads to synergy. And we see that synergy, of course, in the brains of people in the EEGs, when you look at the brain cells firing, when people are actually very well connected, deeply connected through bonding, entrustment, and of course, larger aggregates through belonging. And we can see those connections and how they actually start to go into synergy and flow. And an immensely powerful emergent property that gives you an outcome that is way bigger than the sum of the parts, and that whole gives you a great yield energy outcome. There is something profound there that you and I do not understand. And we believe that that is where the real human intelligence factor all lies. It's with a collective and the way we actually work as the collective. And the human consciousness, of course, across the globe understand that. There's a lot of challenges around that too. But I'm going to stop there for a moment, Marie.
Right. I have a question, Etienne. The synergy you speak about, which is created between humans and their brains, is there any evidence that that can be created between a human brain and AI?
So let's just for a moment qualify this. When we talk about synergy that leads to a whole that is bigger than the sum of the parts or even greater, there we talk about a living entity that is, if you actually put it together, your outcome is not what you actually expected. It gives you that what we call flow state, an emergent property. And that is what life does when you actually have life. And I'm just going to quickly, I'm going to answer your question by actually just qualifying it this way. If you take a neuron, a brain cell, and you take the nucleus, and you take the cytoplasm, that's the internal bits of that cell, and you put the membrane around that, and you have all the mitochondria and everything else at work. If you put all those parts together, you get a neuron. It's a cell. The emergent property is life, and that's very different. And it's just a way of actually just explaining this difference, between the sum of the parts and the whole, the emergent property that life gives us. So if you say people are in synergy and individuals start to connect and they wire together and their emergent property, what you see in the collective is far greater than the sum of the different biological intelligence components. And I think that's important to recognize. So now to answer your question, currently what we see is that AI and BI can work very well together, artificial intelligence and human intelligence. And in fact, you don't even need brain, these brain-computer interfaces. For example, where you have an interface between what's happening in the brain and a computer, very typical to what Neuralink, for example, is studying currently. You don't need that. That is great, and it's an amazing process. But what you actually already have is you and I continuously interact with AI if we use AI on a daily basis. And there's an interaction and engagement between the brain and those models. And the models, of course, learn from what our interaction. They get better. They build a better pattern recognition system and have more and more information that they can deal with. And therefore, of course, have so much more power to provide us with the right answers if we're looking for them. So yes, the interaction between humans and these AI systems are real, and it's happening every day. And in fact, it changes me as well, in the same way that the cell phone is changing me, right? The mobile. You and I, arguably, we don't have the same brains anymore, since the advent of, for example, the mobile phone. The mobile phone has become an extension of our brains in that regard, and it's a very important extension as well. In the same way, I believe that AI and BI will have this kind of hybrid intelligence capacity. Now, the hybrid intelligence term is not something I coined. It actually comes from one of the professors in Columbia University who talks about hybrid intelligence, where you connect AI and human intelligence or BI sensibly. So, yes, it's possible. It's not only possible. It's already happening. and it's going to have a profound effect on the way we do life.
Sure, that's a lot to take in, but very interesting. Etienne, I'd just like to go back to your mention of flow state in human teams. How would you describe flow state?
Okay, so this is a fascinating field. The first question is, why do we work in teams? And so there are two major reasons for it, easy to understand from a sort of, if you look at it from very far. One is what I call a downstream effect, and the other one is the upstream effect. Downstream, our ancestors, as we understand, actually ran away from all the predators on the plains of Africa and Europe and so forth, and they hid away in caves, and they stuck together in groups. And they aggregated into small groups and larger groups. And the first group that you aggregate into, of course, is a pair bonding group where you have offspring. And so offspring ensure the survival of the species at a certain level. But there's also another aggregate following that pair bonding, which is the family. And the analogy, of course, in the world of work and play and sport is the team. And so a team, if you think about a team is the analogy of a family which is driven by the same principle driving factor, and that is called bonding. And bonding is all about entrustment. It means that I entrust my life to you and you entrust your life to me. And once we have that in a team or in a family, you can expect that flow can take place. So the bonding in teams, utilizing the right kind of set of skills and so forth for the tasks, and of course, provided that the task is not too much, is not too demanding, but also not too underwhelming, that is the right kind of ingredients you need for flow. So what is flow? Flow is where effectively, if you look at it from a systems, living systems perspective, where effectively the team operates or functions as a living, breathing entity. Okay, let me explain that. You and I consist of cells. Cells form organs. You and I consist of organs. Organs form the organism, that's you and me. So the living, breathing, the living organisms, the you and me, actually consist of living systems underneath, which are called the organs. In the same way, you and I in a team could be seen as the organs of the next living entity, which is the team. And once you have this synchronization, where you and I actually in a team start to function together, our brains start to demonstrate the, as you put an EEG, right, the electrodes around the head, you can see that we go into synchronization. And that synchronicity that we see on the EEGs, that's not the only reason why we actually go into this flow state. It's probably just an expression of something that's deeply visceral. It's deeply connected. We have oxytocin and vasopressin. Those are the hormones of bonding that's secreted. And we've got a system that is interconnected in terms of purpose and in terms of the roles that we need to play and in terms of what needs to be done. And when this happens, you have what we call an emergent property. That's when the whole becomes bigger than the sum of the parts. That's when you have a high yield energy system. And the highest yield for the lowest energy that is possible, that's what we call flow. So we call that the flow state. So neuronal flow is that effortless kind of synchronous dance that you can see when teams are just almost relentlessly unstoppable, when people actually just connect so deeply, so profoundly, with so little energy needed for the outcomes that they achieve. That's flow. And that's what you want in teams. That's also what, once again, as we said before in the previous section here, that's what makes biological intelligence so beautiful and so different currently from AI.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life. by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, and it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients, or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can share childhood memories with your children or grandchildren. Record a bird's eye view of your career or business, or speak about an unforgettable trip. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. Now, Etienne, would you say that our topic today, which is focusing on how one can optimally combine AI and BI in high-performance teams, would you say that AI could then contribute to flow in human teams?
Yes, undoubtedly so. I have no doubt that that is possible, but not only possible, I also believe that that's something that we need to try to achieve. And why do I say this? What does it practically mean? Well, it means that if you use a large language model, for example, and I'm using ChatGPT, for example. So if you use ChatGPT and you actually prompt your AI model with the right kind of questions, the AI model can help you in a few ways to actually achieve flow in a team. One, it can help build knowledge. It can actually build your knowledge base, which can improve skills and, of course, the outputs that you can deliver. That's the first one. The second one is it can help us to understand each other better. Therefore, once again, it's knowledge not only of the capabilities that you need as a team, but also knowledge about each other and how you can actually build that. So it's a great help in that sense. And, of course, then it can reduce a lot of the work that needs to be done. So in one way, we view the sort of level one worker today as being AI. So AI is probably going to replace all level one workers, which is where you know individuals have just completed their studies and they go, and that's in the convention. Let's say 10 years ago, they complete their studies, they go into their first year or so, the first phase of work, they become level one workers. We believe that's going to be replaced by AI. And therefore, our new level one worker has to be a level 1.1 worker or a level two worker, right? And that's actually the way we actually continue to transcend this system into flow. So the point is that if you use a level one worker in the AI space, you utilize AI to support you in the right ways that is deeply human, it should enhance our capabilities of flow. What are the caveats? What are the challenges? The challenges are, if we actually use AI continuously and it fragments the way we connect, it fragments our bonding and our collective purpose, our sense of collective purpose, the way we use storytelling and add meaning to what we are doing, that deep buy-in and belief of what is important. If AI starts to fragment that process in the same way that, for example, watching Netflix can do, or just being on my cell phone and my mobile all the time, while I'm actually not connecting and working collaboratively. Those are all similar challenges, right, that actually fragments the way that the living, breathing entity connects, and therefore you will not find flow. And that's the downside. So, yes, there's a great upside if you use it properly. I have to make one quick comment at this point, Mariette, and that is one of the most important things that's very practical, of course, is how you prompt your large language model. If you use, for example, ChatGPT, I'm using these examples, but there are many others, Gemini and Thinking Meta. The questions you ask and the requests you make determines what you get back. And therefore, it's important to ask the right questions and to prompt your model properly. Prompting is, I believe, a skill, and I believe that teams in the workplace and elsewhere need to really focus on what are the things we need to use when we prompt so that we can move into flow. So I would say a great field of development going forward to optimize teams will be, okay, how do we actually use AI? How do we prompt it so that it actually enhances our flow state in teams?
I'm now thinking, Etienne, if someone who leads a team is listening to this podcast and they now feel, you know, a little bit overwhelmed by all this information, where does one find help to teach your teams how to prompt properly? Because I suppose you're not going to ask your AI model to teach you how to learn prompting.
Such a good question. And I don't have a direct answer for you, but I'll just make a few comments. Firstly, a good large language model will probably be able to give you some good guidelines as to how to prompt it. So I don't think that's an absolute no-no. But what I do think is an absolute yes, is that organizations are now increasingly paying attention to appointing AI officers and even in the future, I assume, AI teams. And in fact, the most progressive organizations are looking at this kind of capacity, of course, within the human capital space, which is the HR function. And when it comes to organizational development and human capital in the human capital space, this is becoming more and more important. So I would recommend organizations and teams, if they don't have internal capacity, where there's people with experience already, at least scholars and astute scholars of prompting AI models, that they ask the consulting firms who are working with them in the OD space, whether they've got this kind of support and expertise. My opinion is that this is going to become mainstream as part of the way we actually develop our organizations.
And Etienne, could you explain to me what an AI officer would do?
So, Mariette, I'm a bit of a layman in this field, but let me just share some thoughts and my understanding. The conventional way of deploying an AI officer in an organization is to task that individual to find all the ways and to execute that to deploy AI as a support system, as a tool in the organization. So it's first actually into the organizational frameworks, into the way we do business. For example, AI is going to help us, you know, in the legal space with certain documentations. It's going to help with when it comes to our data analysis with specific functions that it needs to do there. And it's going to help us in the world of, for example, in the executive suite, we might use AI to actually formulate documents and proposals and so forth, where that is required, especially on the business development side. So these are just thoughts, right? But basically, the way you should think about the organization of the future, which is now, is that the core of your organization is an AI, big AI system. And then you've got people working around that model who are reskilled, upskilled, to utilize what AI provides continuously. And of course, that AI officer's work is very much cut out for him or her because it grows at a rapid pace. And you might eventually have a whole AI division that actually just works on understanding and implementing and deploying this AI support to the best of what is available. What I think is an additional component to this, of course, is the way that AI can be utilized in the human capital and organizational development space, leadership development, team effectiveness, and the way that we actually work as people together. And that's where the hybrid comes in as well, that hybrid way of actually helping us to support the biological intelligence system to work at its best to achieve the flow that we're looking for and what we call self-organization. Mariette, I hope that answered the question to a degree, but of course, as I say, I am a layman, and I think there are people out there who will actually be much, much more fluent in the way that they can describe this for us.
Yeah, thank you, Etienne. That clarifies a lot. I wanted to ask which services you offer at NeuroZone to help leadership and teams achieve optimal results.
Yeah, so at NeuroZone, Mariette, what we do is we've got a very strong focus on building what we call high-performance resilience for leaders and for leadership. And if you think about leaders, you think about the 10% of an organization. So if you've got a medium-sized organization of 1,000 people, it's that 100 to 150 people who are involved in the leadership and the processes of taking the company forward. And we also think about critical teams and so forth. And there we really focus on supporting those individuals and their teams to build this high-performance resilience capacity by actually looking at this from a living systems approach. So we really support this idea of actually achieving flow, achieving this biological intelligence that actually is so optimized that people, that we even self-organize. And I often say, you know, we've got to work very hard to self-organize, but self-organization means that this organization is in a flow state of great outputs and outcomes. And that's what we do at NeuroZone. And we, of course, AI has an important role to play in this process. And the way we do it, mostly from an interventional perspective, is through micro-learning, which is such a valuable way of building this high-performance resilience system, micro-learning on digital delivery systems, and actually supporting, therefore, large groups of people at the same time in a very cost-effective way. And we've learned that learned resilience has got great effect on the high-performance resilience system and, therefore, the outcomes of flow over time. So we're very interested in supporting the capacity of people to achieve this.
Where can listeners learn more about your work?
So I am, very active still at NeuroZone. So if they look at www.neurozone.com, there's also a thought leadership piece there of Aparte, and there's a section. If they click on the thought leadership, they will actually see the articles that we've been writing, the blogs, and everything that I've been sort of up to in the business side of things over the last few years.
Yeah, and your NeuroZone is also very active on LinkedIn. I think just this morning I noticed a post on micro-learning.
Yes, of course. Thank you. Yes, of course. We have a very active LinkedIn page. We post blogs very often. You know, please, for any listener who wants to follow us, very welcome to come and follow us on our LinkedIn page. We post these blogs very often. We post articles. So I do also a lot of thought-provoking articles, happy to stick up my head and to also get the feedback. That's how we learn from people who follow us and actually make very good comments, you know, and help us shape the thinking around some of these more philosophical areas of the brain-body system and the high-performance resilience. So very welcome to follow us on our LinkedIn page, NeuroZone. I think it's probably easy to just look for that, Marie.
Yes. I will attach the link to your website to the podcast, and then the LinkedIn address will also be in the podcast notes.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, Etienne, may I ask you a fun question?
Absolutely.
We're going to the realm of the imagination. If you could be transported back to any period of history, Etienne, and earn your living as a musician, which picture comes to mind?
Oh, my goodness. You know what comes to mind for me? I'm standing on the piazza in Lucca where Puccini grew up and did his work. And I'm singing his arias as he produces them. And in a top tenor notes of the beautiful C notes in Tuscany. What a beautiful, dreamy state that would be.
Yeah. And for those listeners who don't know, Etienne is a trained opera singer, and I was wondering what would come up when I asked him this question.
You're not surprised, are you?
No. But all the same, I enjoyed that answer.
Thanks, Mariette.
So, Etienne, I don't think I can thank you for allaying all our fears regarding AI, not mine anyway, but thank you for offering us such lucid insights. And I do think what I'm realizing is that we have to use our adaptivity in this situation. And I think, we will need to be reskilled to make use of everything that's at our disposal in this sense. So thank you very much.
Such a pleasure, Mariette. And thank you very much for having me, and also to the listeners. All of the best to you.
Yeah, to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. If you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series Calm, Clear and Helpful is produced by me, with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.